the oil, what they call Brent crude, which is sort of the global oil brand, stays around $110 a barrel. If it goes much below that, they're not going to do this kind of drilling because they can't make any money at it. So in other words, we are in, the cheap oil is gone. The cheap oil will never come back. And when we spend $112 a barrel on oil, that is money that is taken away from other things. That's money that cannot go to schools or health care or just ordinary living or anything else. You know, is that money goes into maintaining this energy supply. This money could also be taken away from environmental cleanup. And you can almost foresee a time when some of these oil technologies that really destroy the environment, they're going to come and say, well, it's just too expensive to repair that damage. And so then the climate cost itself could be so high that they're going to try and nickel and dime it. And if the climate cost could be human civilization itself. So that's what we mean when we talk about the cheap oil is gone. And the thing to think about here is that, well, that was money. In other words, maybe we've gotten used to paying $110 a barrel for oil. Not too long ago, the price went up to $150, almost $150 a barrel. And then it really got bad for the economy. And it went down again very, very low, but now it's back up again to 100, 110. And it's probably going to stay there if it doesn't go higher. Well, that was money. You know, we find if we need the oil, we find a way to pay for it. And we try and cut down on our use of it, make it more efficient and everything. But we find a way to raise that money. But then we have to think of something else. There's not just the money cost of oil. Think of the energy cost of oil. When you drill a pipe 3 or 4 miles into the ground, it takes energy to do that. It takes energy to make the pipe. It takes energy to pump the oil out. It takes energy to build those trucks and run those trucks and do everything else. The whole enterprise is not only costly in terms of money, is costly in terms of energy. And I think I'll take a call a little bit later. Let me get into this oil business a little bit more. So that was money. We had to think about the energy cost. And there's this concept called EROEI, Energy Returned on Energy Invested. It's kind of like the net return. Now, that Pennsylvania well, you know, that struck oil at 69 feet, the energy return on that was probably maybe over 100 to 1. In other words, the energy it takes to drill down 69 feet, the energy you return, all that oil is probably way over 100 to 1. The same with all those Texas oil gushers we used to see in the movies. Well, now with the kind of oil drilling we're doing now, the latest figures I've seen is that the global return is 15. In other words, you put in one unit of energy and you get back 15. Well, that's still a net return, but it's declining. And I understand that the U.S. Return is 11. And declining. This comes from the British Royal Society Journal. They did a big study on this. So if it's declining, if it ever gets down to 1 to 1, if you have to put in as much energy as you get back, then you just say, why bother? There's no point in doing it at all. Drilling stops. Well, drilling probably stops before you even get down to 1-to-1, maybe when you get down to 3-to-1. And so that leads us to one of these expensive technologies in terms of energy and in terms of money is fracking. And you can sort of compare that to scraping the bottom of the barrel. The trouble with fracking is that you're not drilling into porous rock where oil kind of seeps through and gathers in a pool. The oil that comes in the shale is known as tight oil, and it's little tiny droplets that are just kind of locked into this very hard rock. And to get that rock, to get the oil out of there, you have to blast away at the rock with high-pressure water, hot water, chemicals, sand, and everything else. Basically, you are really scraping the bottom of the barrel. So what happens is because of the geology, the oil does not flow very long. It's not like that oil well in Pennsylvania where the oil just kept flowing year after year. The oil you get from fracking, it declines very quickly. First year, you might get quite a bit, and then after the first year or two, it really drops off very quickly. Another thing that happens is that it's not one big pool of oil. It's a whole lot of different areas, and so you have sweet spots, or what they call sweet spots, where you get a little better return, and maybe just a few hundred yards away you don't. And so the sweet spots get taken, they get used up earlier. And so this is why when they say that we're producing so much oil from fracking, one thing they're not telling you is the net cost. They're not telling you how much energy you put into it. They're just telling you we're getting this amazing production. They're also not telling you that this production may not last very long. A third thing they're not telling you is that how much water it uses up. It not only turns the water to toxic chemical, and it uses it up. The water disappears. And in the future, we might find out that actually the water is worth more, much more, than the oil is worth. And I think now we'll take a little time out. I think we did get a caller. Oh, he did. Okay, I'm sorry. If you really got a question, I'd like to go into this a little more, but if you got a question, okay, you can start calling 231-8187. Okay, now, there's a lot of talk these days about this American oil boom. We're going to be, in fact, just today in the news, I heard that we might even be exporting oil. The oil companies want to export the oil. We had a little a ban on exporting oil that we wanted to keep American oil for ourselves. There's talk about we're going to be energy self-sufficient for who knows how many years. This is frankly, I looked at these figures and I thought about it a lot, and it just seems to me like a huge hoax. They are, it's a product of either, if you listen to Barbara Bernstein's show Monday, Locus Focus, she interviewed Richard Heinberg, and he said that the oil companies, they are playing up this hoax because it pumps up their stock. Also, I think for a lot of Americans, there's sort of a desperate ignorance involved. We can't believe that the oil boom is finally running out. But now we do have a caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Hi, person. Good show. I'm calling you from San Francisco, and
okay.
I work with a nonprofit down here that works on energy issues.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of fraud that's been going on with the energy companies.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting massive subsidies, and they basically always have. For example, just in coal, back in the 80s, I took a photovoltaics course, and photovoltaics is when you convert solar to electricity.
Yes.
And they were talking back then that solar in 1986 was about I think it was about 28, no, excuse me, it was 35 cents a kilowatt hour to make the electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you looked at your bill, you were seeing about 8 to 10 cents a kilowatt hour. So that was like 3 and 4 times more than what you were paying. So why would you ever want to make electricity at 30 cents a kilowatt hour? And but now it's down to about 17 cents.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe even 16, depending on the technology. But the coal at that time, even though solar was 35 cents a kilowatt hour to make it, coal in the 1980s was 45 cents. But they were getting so many subsidies that even though you were looking at your bill at 8 to 10 cents a kilowatt hour, you weren't seeing the 35 cents of subsidies that you were paying basically on April 15th to the coal company.
Yeah, really? I didn't know. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it was 45 even back then. So in the 80s, solar was cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is solar has never gotten the subsidies that coal gets on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And those subsidies come out in a whole bunch of different things. Railroad, barge subsidies, the black lung disease,
mm-hmm.
the failure to clean up the aftermath of their strip lines.
Mountaintop removal.
Yeah, they're not cleaning up those messes.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're doing it on such a cheap scale that, you know, they're basically making the taxpayers
mm-hmm.
pay for it. So,
mm-hmm.
So the fact of the matter is that even back then, solar was cost effective, but
mm-hmm.
now solar has so beat it out that down here in California, some people are actually paying about 15 cents on their bill every
mm-hmm.
month. So they'd be basically paying a penny a month in subsidies to solar
mm-hmm.
versus the existing 45 or upwards
mm-hmm.
because the mountaintop removal has gotten so bad. But there's a guy I actually recommended he call today because he's been pushing this idea called feed-in tariffs.
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and if you get a guy named Paul calling in shortly, he's going to be pushing it because mm-hmm. feed-in tariff is, you know, when Enron happened to California, but
just figure you could put the put energy, if you produce energy, you could sell it back to the grid.
Exactly, and
mm-hmm.
and it's in Japan and in Germany, they beat out the nuclear plants. As of a few months ago, Germany beat out the nuclear plants. They're actually producing more electricity by solar than all of the nukes. And Japan did it earlier last year.
Mm-hmm.
Japan did the same thing, and they did it by basically paying people. If I remember right, Japan was doing 52 cents a kilowatt hour,
mm-hmm.
and if people are paying 15 cents on their meter, then basically they gave a subsidy of about triple just to get people to put the panels on their roof. And they'll only pay them that 52 cents a kilowatt hour for the first 5 years.
Well, now they're trying. I just read this the other day that some, I think this might be in Hawaii, but I'm not sure, where the energy company is saying that people who actually have, you know, they have their solar panels and they sell oil back into the grid, that they should be penalized for that because it's taken away business from the energy companies.
You know, that I don't know about Hawaii, but I know that Arizona did that.
Maybe that's where it is. I just read about this the other day.
And if you can imagine, Arizona, nothing but no trees, nothing
mm-hmm.
but hot, nothing but sunlight.
And no water after a while either.
Yeah, exactly. And
mm-hmm.
and so the idea that they would not go solar,
mm-hmm.
that they would actually penalize you for solar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did. They were actually trying to set it up so that you would have to pay like 70 cents to you, even though the meter said 15 cents, you would not be paid 70 cents. You would have to pay for the rights to sell electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So you would never get paid. And California got ripped off, too. Everybody thinks we're a pack of liberals down here in the state legislature, but it's far from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys wrote this deregulation law that said that we don't get feed-in tariffs in here.
Oh,
we
boy.
Have to do it city by city in order
mm-hmm.
to get it to happen.
One thing about solar, though, is that yeah, I think solar energy is great, but it comes out in the form of electricity. So solar energy does not, it does not, well, you could have an electric car, but it'd be a huge conversion to go from combustion engines to electric engines, and it also does not provide. The chemicals and the plastics and all that. So solar energy is great, but it does not totally replace petroleum.
Well, that's not entirely true. And in fact, you know, we got so much petroleum floating around just in garbage. We could harvest what's been in the landfills. I don't know if you know it, but they've come up with some new battery designs on recycled plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all of these bags that are floating around in the ocean nowadays, if they started harvesting those, they could actually turn them into batteries.
And we might get peak garbage.
Yeah. And, I mean, we'd clean up the ocean plus, mm-hmm. Turn them into something functional. And there are these forms of batteries now that are being created out of recycled plastic.
Mm-hmm. Well.
And so, there are a lot of options. And mm-hmm. Half of the problem, in fact, most of the problem of electricity is that when you send it 10 miles down the road in electric wires, you lose a lot.
That's
right. When you
right.
send it 50 mm-hmm. miles, you lose 50%.
That's right. Yeah.
So the idea, I mean, San Francisco is such a phony city in a way because...
I know, I lived there at one time.
Yeah, we got suckered here by this, mm-hmm. by Shell Oil, who claims that they can build a solar farm up near Reno,
mm-hmm.
and send the electricity down to us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a minute. If we put solar panels all along the BART station, mm-hmm. you wouldn't have to send the electricity, mm-hmm. you know, 5 miles. You'd be sending it just across the bay, mm-hmm. instead of sending it 200 miles or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the idea that these guys, you take this exponential loss when you send it over 50 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's waste has always been the problem with electricity.
Yeah.
And every time they shut down plants and put them further and further out, they're guaranteeing there's more waste, and so they have to burn more coal in order mm-hmm. to get it 50 miles.
Well, there we go. I think.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you very much for your call.
Yeah, no sweat. And look for Paul. He's got a lot of details.
Well, we will see.
All right.
This is Fight the Empire. We're talking about oil this time, and we got Jim on the line. Good morning, Jim.
Hey. Hi, Pear.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't got time to talk, but I want to recommend a movie called Promised Land.
Promised Land, okay.
Promised Land. Matt Damon stars in it.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I watched it last night,
mm-hmm.
and it's very good.
Mm.
And it's the story of fracking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I recommend it highly.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that tip. Promised Land with Matt Damon. I remember that movie came out earlier this last year, and so thanks for that tip.
Very fast.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered how it got so little attention, but it deserves a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for doing everything.
Well, thank you for your call.
Bye.
I think we have another caller on the line.
Just a minute.
Oh, well. Well, while we're waiting for the next caller, there's also been talk of this lately. I don't know, a few weeks ago, we started hearing about this. Mexico, back in the 30s, they nationalized their oil company, and now I think it actually passed their Mexican Congress. They are going to open up their oil company to foreign investment, which basically means U.S. investment. And this is being touted as sort of privatizing Mexico's oil and making it more efficient and opening up a vast new reserves. Well, this is another scam, folks. What they are doing is Mexico had a big oil field, a Cantarell oil field, and it was a large one, but it is very rapidly depleting. This is conventional oil. And that Cantarell field is depleting, and now Mexico would like some help in scraping the bottom of their barrel. Well, they don't have the technology to do that. So they are turning to the U.S. and other foreign companies who are better at scraping the bottom of the barrel. That's what that is all about. It's it may get us a little more oil for a few more years, but it is not a big, vast reserve. And this is another thing. Let me say this before we take our next caller, that there's a big difference between a reserve and production. A reserve is oil sitting in the ground, and you can say there are a trillion barrels of oil sitting in the ground, but if it costs you half a trillion barrels of oil to get it out, it's not that great. And if for some reason you can't get all that oil, what's important is the amount of oil you actually get, and they call this the ATM effect. It's like having, say you had $1 million in the bank, but you're only allowed to get $100 a month. Well, the $1 million in the bank doesn't do you much good if all you can do is withdraw $100 a month. So having said that, let's go on to our next call. Paul is on the line. Hi, Paul.
Hi. It seems to me that the best way we should shift our energy policy is, I'll give you an example. There's this little town in Germany called Weilsburg, and that little village makes 333% more energy than the whole village uses.
Really? Okay.
It's 100 farms in this one area, and there's a movie made about it.
They made
$6 million in income from harvesting solar energy last year, and it's documented in a book, and there's a movie about the village.
What's the name of the movie?
It's free. It's online. It's called Here Comes the Sun, - Sheer. You have to put in the - Sheer, otherwise you get the Beatles tunes.
Okay.
But, but if when in the movie you see the cameras driving along the road, and then it goes over a hill and comes down, all of a sudden you see solar panels on fields after fields across Germany. And the reason this works is because this young guy named Hermann Scheer wrote a law for Germany called the Feed-in Tariff Law that requires the utilities to pay 99 cents a kilowatt hour for any farmer house that harvests solar energy and feeds it onto the grid.
Well, we were talking about that with the previous caller, and this is a good idea. But already one of the oil companies or somebody is trying to get out of that. They're trying to make people pay for the privilege of selling their oil back into the grid. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that's called ALEC. And ALEC is the American Legislative Exchange Council. And what it is that's the 10 largest oil companies in the world. And they have decided to smash the solar feed-in tariff. But the way they tried the same thing in Germany, and it didn't work. Because what the German community did was city by city, they passed feed-in tariffs city by city. And that's the same way we got rid of the plastic bags in this country. That's the same way we changed the marijuana laws in this country. City by city, if five activists in Portland will petition and put a feed-in tariff in Portland, you can then fight the utility companies in court. Because in Germany, the movement won in court, in every single court. They were sued by the oil companies to stop the feed-in tariff. And in every court case in Germany, they won.
But I think one thing to remember about solar energy is great. And what it means, if it is as good and productive as it might be, it means we switched to a kind of all-electric economy. Now, in Germany and in Europe, you know, the trains run on electricity. We don't have that so much here. We have in some places.
You can switch. You can switch. The point is, Here Comes the Sun, it explains step by step how the German movement was able to not only defeat the oil companies, but shut down the nukes. You know, Germany is shutting down all of their nukes. They've shut down nine. They're going to shut them all down by 2022. And in this little town I was talking about, the farmers, they made $6 million producing solar. And it's further north than Portland, Oregon is.
Okay,
so
well,
if they can do it, Portland can do it.
I think we're on to something. The only thing to keep in mind is that it's a mammoth undertaking. It means the end of the oil economy be replaced by a electricity economy, which involves a lot of... that's not an easy thing to do. It creates a lot of jobs.
It created...
Of course,
you know,
it does.
Germany has created 500,000 jobs.
Of course. I agree with you. The point is that this is such a huge undertaking that it has to be, it probably take years and years before you complete it. And as far as I can see, our government and our businesses are not even beginning on that. So we're
waiting. It isn't them. It's going to be us.
Well,
it takes 2 years. If we were to, mm-hmm. if five activists in each town in Oregon were to put a feed-in tariff in place
mm-hmm.
This year, in 2 years, we could have our economy shifted over to probably 30% solar energy in a couple years. Just read, see the movie or read the book. The book is called Energy Imperative by Hermann Scheer, and it shows how quickly Germany shut down their nukes, has banned fracking, and they mm-hmm. did this all with solar and wind.
But
they did it in just a few years.
Well, this is good, but they still have cars on their autobahns, so this is a big undertaking.
But electric cars.
Well, they still have a lot of gas-powered cars. I agree with you. What you say is a good thing to do, and it should be done, but it takes a long time, and we should have started years ago, but we are not.
We did. When Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the White House, we did.
And then Reagan took them away.
And because Reagan took them away, he took away the leadership of the American solar movement. Reagan destroyed the solar industry in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Reagan belongs in prison for what he did. Reagan is the reason we had that hurricane that destroyed the Philippines.
Okay.
If Reagan hadn't done that, the United States would now be 100% solar powered.
Could be. Well, thank you for your call. Thank you for the tip on that movie and the book. And I think we're at the end of our time. This has been Fight the Empire. We've been talking about oil, and now stay tuned for what's coming up on KBOO, your radio station.
Yes, you are listening to KBOO Portland. Good show today with Per Fogring. Thanks for your calls. It is a minute now before 10 o'clock. In 1 hour on Between the Covers, host Kathleen Stevenson speaks with Dan Johnson, writer and KBOO volunteer, about his new book, The Air in Me, a collection of prose and poetry reflecting on Dan's life as an aging gay man. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, a monthly program featuring interviews and discussions of works by African American authors. But first, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. Thanks for listening to KBOO Radio, and thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you are not a member, why not start the new year by becoming one? Just go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife. Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Flashpoints, we play sounds from a powerful documentary film, War on Whistleblowers. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.
Galileo and Copernicus got the whistleblower treatment for challenging the conventional wisdom that the world was flat and that the universe circles around us. And Galileo spent the rest of his life under house arrest. They were the pioneers of modern science. Whistleblowers are the pioneers of change.
Daniel Ellsberg is the source of the Pentagon documents.
It is time to quit making national heroes out of those who steal secrets and publish them in the newspaper.
I began copying the Pentagon Papers to give them to the American Congress and share them with the American public.
I came to realize that a wrongful war was going on and would continue to go on unless these lies were exposed.
He is the preeminent whistleblower in the deepest sense.
Whistleblowers have become a kind of fundamental part of how our democracy works.
Mark Felt, the former associate director of the FBI, revealed that he was the man that helped bring down the Nixon administration.
They have unquestionable patriotism and a lot of courage.
His testimony was a key to the eventual $246 billion settlement with five tobacco companies.
Jeffrey Wigand brought down Big Tobacco.
Former Enron employee Sharon Watkins, better known as the Enron.
Ex-cop Frank Serpico changed the NYPD forever when he revealed a multi-million dollar payoff corruption scam.
You have to go up against the odds to do the right thing.
Karen Silkwood took on one of the biggest companies in America, crusading against America's nuclear power industry.
And in the face of fear, she continued to collect
it. It changed history. What Dan
genuine
did.
Genuine American hero, Jeff Wyden.
The greatest gift that the national security state ever got was obviously the ability to exploit the fear of 9/11 very aggressively without opposition to enjoy this massive booming growth and power.
Exerting that vast power, the national security state surrounds itself within a wall of silence, where whistleblowers and the free press are attacked and vilified, even when lives are at stake.